Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Eudeley Wickham Ashby. And today we're going to talk about a very difficult subject, that is rejection. Most of us have experienced this at some stage in our lives, and it is a painful experience. Today, I have with me in the studio Mr. Sinclair Brown, a counselor, to help me discuss this subject matter. Welcome to the program again, Sinclair.
Thank you so much. Good morning, good afternoon, good day to everyone across the world. Because we know it is an international program, so I'm quite privileged and honored in the name of Jesus to be here. So yes, thank you.
Okay, so Sinclair, let's start at the beginning, as we all should, at the very beginning. What is rejection?
Okay, rejection is, I guess, at a basic level, the dismissing or refusing of a proposal or idea. That's on the very basic level, understanding that whole thing of rejection. So if you talk about idea, we talk about subject, but then we come into a personal, they themselves feel rejected, they feel abandoned, they feel neglected, they feel not part of the crowd, they don't feel part of a family, they don't feel part of society or organization. So many persons do go through that feeling of rejection. And it is a very lonely, and it can be a very traumatic space to be in.
I believe it is. And we can start by looking at the whole delivery of a baby and the mother, father rejecting that baby simply because it has a disability, skin tone is different, or for some other reason. How do we help that child and parent to deal with rejection?
Well, one of the things, I guess I want to look at it a little twofold for a second. One, there are many people that when a child is born, from the get, they recognize something physically is wrong with this child, be it the eyes, the physical, the shape of the head, limbs, the arms, and the leg. And they can then feel like a disconnect or repulsion by this thing. It is like the expectation, I know it's not slightly different, but I just want to see the emotion that we can experience. Where a person may go into a restaurant and they're expecting a good meal, they expect a nice meal, but then you get there, you see something in the meal. That emotion, because you had this expectation, you're hungry, and therefore there's something in the meal, and there's this emotion of repulse, of disconnect. And that same emotion, because no emotion is bad, no bad emotions, there are emotions. You have positive and negative emotions, but they're there for a reason. So sometimes that emotion does not necessarily go through a cognitive thought. Yeah, so emotions don't necessarily go through a thought process. They're more impulsive. They're very much triggered. So here it is, you have given birth to a child and the mother and father are there. They may or may not have known that there's a disability, but let's go with the first part where they didn't know that this child had a disability. And the child is born, and here comes the disability. And the parents now go through an automatic disconnect, surprise, all of those things. So that emotion now is registered very early from childbirth. Let's say the parents did know about it. Let's say through the scans or there's a history, because I'm in the family, you can know that we have the history or the possibility of our children having, let me say, mongoloid or a physical challenge or the like. So you can have a longer time to actually prepare yourself for receiving this child. So there would have been emotions that you've been having, the feelings you've been having, but you have a longer period to actually go through that emotion. What I can advise people is to actually seek some level of counsel when they find out that it's possible this child might be blind, it might be deaf, it might be, you know, physically disabled, and the like, so that they prepare themselves for that emotion when and if it does happen and at childbirth. So that's it to one. If they know about the child's disability, and if they didn't know about the child's disability. But I also want to put something here so that we're talking to both in the disabled community, that sometimes I'm counseling people that have rejected their child and the child is healthy. All 10 fingers, all 10 toes, eyes are there, the ears are there. There's nothing wrong with the child. But sometimes the parent in himself is not in a mental, emotional position to be connected to the child. So one of the things that we talk about from a counseling perspective, because if you have a disability, you can easily can begin to get into the place where, because of my disability is why my parents rejected me. And there's that strong possibility. But there are children where there's nothing wrong with them physically. There's nothing there wrong with them. But they were also rejected at childbirth. So that the disabled community, that they don't continue going to that place of depression, because going into that space of rejection can lead many people to depression and to lead to different symptoms and syndromes as a result of rejection.
Right. So can we explore some of those symptoms and syndromes? Because you're correct in saying that the level of rejection impacts the individual and yes, often leads to the person feeling depressed, guilty, and other emotions.
So I think that's something called RSD, which is rejection sensitive dysphoria. And that'd be, once again, getting a little deep, but I just want to begin to look at some of these things, this whole dysphoria, because in Greek, dysphoria means hard to bear. Yeah, RSD is rejection sensitive dysphoria. And it's not a medical diagnosis in any form or fashion. Some may even be connected with ADHD, how people have defined that. But I said dysphoria comes from the Greek word, which means hard to bear. And people that live with RSD, it's very difficult for them to handle rejection. So they can actually go into victim mode very easily because of the rejection or the assumption of rejection. So you may find two people have similar disabilities, but their approach to life is totally different, or their attitude towards certain things are different. And it comes from this, in some cases, the dysphoria. They can get very upset if they think, not if it happens, if they think someone has shunned them or criticized them, even if that is not the case. Yeah? So there are a lot of teenager adults with either, you know, ADHD or disabilities or stuff like that. They become very sensitive to rejection. Some of the things that are connected there, which your first question asked, is about the rejection. While from my end as a counselor, there's certain things that I would look at where I'm not in the medical fraternity, but there's certain things as a counselor I'm looking at. And yes, there is a link between the parents not embracing and accepting. We talk about eye contact and touch and those things that can actually fuel the RSD. Because as a child, you're looking for that eye contact from the parent. You're looking for that emotional, physical touch. You're looking for that emotional touch to be connected. However, this RSD can easily be linked to the trauma of mom not giving eye contact or dad not giving eye contact. And the causality of it is the possibility that because the child has this disability, they couldn't look at the child, they felt bad, they were crying, they went into postpartum. All types of things can, as a result, happen here, not getting that loving touch from extended people. So this now has triggered this thing called RSD, which you can have even social phobias. You can withdraw from society. And you see that every time somebody looks at you, that they're looking at my disability, or people staring at me, people looking at me, which may not necessarily be true, or to the degree that they believe that this thing is happening. And then add some thoughts to it. Oh, these people looking at me because of my disability, and they think I'm ugly, or they think I'm this. And it goes into a real serious place that people get so depressed that they can actually consider taking their lives, or they don't want to live anymore. Yes? It can affect relationships, your family, friends, romantic partners. They believe that they're being rejected because they can almost have self-fulfilling prophecies about it. Because, oh, I know this person is going to leave me. I know this person is going to walk away. I know this person. And what they can do is put too much pressure. Let me talk about a romantic relationship. They can put so much pressure on that romantic relationship that that person now feels like they have to keep doing these things to prove I love you. That you're going to say I love you. Because they go into their head, and you can easily go into that space and believe, oh, you're going to leave me because. And then the breakup does happen. Oh, I know you would have done it before. So this can cause a lot of issues to the point that people may not actually want to be around because of the negative emotion, language, and actually by extension, the person that is suffering from RSD can be actually a person that is the violent, verbally abusive person, even physically in some cases. So it does have a swing that some people could be going through as a result of rejection.
Okay, so St. Clair, let us break down some of the points you just raised in terms of the individual who may feel, you know, various levels of emotions around being rejected. And you said that sometimes the individual can play the role of victim. What does that look like? What does the victim role look like?
What I'm going to do, I'm going to list some of the things, as you mentioned, that some people that can be going through, and this is also for able-bodied persons. So this is a rejection period.
Yes.
There are a lot of people will be feeling, and so I'm praying that many that listen to this program are hearing. So some people that suffer from RSD as a rejection syndrome disorder, you can be easily embarrassed. If you find some person that is easily embarrassed, so maybe you don't have anything to do with them, but they can be embarrassed in those situations. That is one point. They get very angry or have an emotional burst when they feel like someone has hurt or rejected them. So you're talking about not just having a feeling if they feel like, but they get very angry or have an emotional burst when they feel like someone has hurt or rejected them. They set very high standards for themselves they often can't meet. So it's almost like you're going to have this expected failure, you know, this expectation that is not met, and it can result once again in this emotional outburst. They have low self-esteem. They can feel anxious, especially in social settings. They have problems with relationships, as I mentioned just now. They stay away from social situations and withdraw from other people. Feel like a failure because they haven't lived up to other people's expectations. Sometimes think about hurting themselves. And these are just some of these symptoms that are common, even in some other mental health conditions. But the whole thing with RSD can be confused with, you know, the same borderline personality disorders and OCD and all of that. We're not going with that. We're just saying that they can be confused. And that's one reason I believe counseling is very important, or going to a professional psychologist or so forth to find out where I am so I can understand myself and what is happening to me in this area of rejection.
Okay, right. So that helps significantly in allowing us to understand what rejection can look like with some of our various emotions.
Yes, please.
As the adult now, because you might face this rejection as a child and it continues into adulthood.
Right.
How do you start to unravel all of what you experience in relation to rejection so that you can balance and level out your emotions?
Yes. One of the things for certain with rejection, you don't allow yourself to be in that state of rejection. You embrace the fact that, yes, I have a disability, but I am not the disability. And you know what I mean? It's like, you know, I'm more than the person with a wheelchair. I'm more than the person with a cane. I'm more than the person that is hearing impaired. I'm more than the person visually impaired. So like anyway, if you have rejection with any person, there are two buckets, I said. I want you to see life as you have in two buckets. It's either something is true or something is not true. And you're going to start there because if a person says, if you say you're a visually impaired or hearing impaired person, say you're blind. It is true. You know what I mean? Which is different to say, you know, maybe say you're slim and a person say you're fat. It is not true. In one, it is a true, you put in a true bucket. The other one is not true, so you put in a not true bucket. And either one of those buckets, it shouldn't be offensive because the person either saying something that is true or the person saying something that is not true. And it is not a personal attack on you. What happens when people are going through rejection? It is normally the voices and the emotions that's going on in their head. And when somebody say, or there's a stimuli from outside that connects with what we are saying inside of our own mind, that is what it becomes offensive. Because we're kind of connecting what is inside of the mind. So one of the therapies that I go through people is first acknowledging self, understanding yourself, and you're the person that have to accept yourself, love yourself, embrace the good, the bad, and indifferent. Because many times we're asking people to do for us what we're not doing for ourselves. As I mentioned in the listing was low self-esteem. If we don't have an ability to love ourselves or to see the good in ourselves, we actually go out into the world expecting someone else to love us. And this is both disabled and able-bodied persons. So here in the disabled community, because you're looking outside of yourself and then you compare yourself to others, you end up also rejecting yourself instead of embracing yourself and then looking at what are the good things about myself? What are some of the strengths of myself? Also embracing the weaknesses of myself and some of the proclivities of myself. And it's for you, the individual, to start and learn to love every level of self. And that allows you to be motivated to embrace yourself to be able to cause myself to go out beyond what would hinder me, which is my mind, right? And it takes a period of time because you must have said, it took up to adulthood for this person to start to decide to change. So it also takes that amount of effort because it took several years for you to get here. It's going to take a level of understanding self to start to unravel what is that. It doesn't take years, but it does take deliberate effort from individuals to not just go to one session of therapy, but go to several and to be deliberate and intentional about changing our mind.
St. Clair, you have hit on a very strong and important point, and that is self-love.
Yes, please.
How do we teach ourselves, teach our children, teach our family, and by extension, our society, that whole self-love concept? How do we break it down into small bites that each day we can practice it?
So let me first go with the parent that has a disabled child. So I have mentioned that many times that the lack of eye contact or the lack of touch actually can cause a lot of damage. So if you have a disabled child or you have a nephew or a cousin or family member, eye contact is very important, even if a person is visually impaired. Because from what I've been counseling, a person can almost pick up if a person is looking at them. You know, sometimes it'd be like, oh, this person is visually impaired, so I don't have to look at them. No, looking at them the same way how you would look at a child that can see, you look at that child the same way, because it's something that God has done. Sad to say, prove it or test it or where's the gauge to say this is true. But as a person that understands how God does things, there's more to the human body than the physical. And so looking at that child, be it visually impaired, if the child is deaf, still talk to that child. There's an element of feeling the words and the emotions. So speaking and touching and looking. So that allows that child to grow in a healthy manner. Why is this so? Even healthy children that have been, and they tested, it was a very horrible experiment. But even children that are healthy, that were not given eye contact, that were not given touch, that were not given a smile, their body went through atrophy, the muscles started to not develop. And then those children actually died in that experiment, even after they finished the experiment. So if healthy children, as far as because they're healthy, as physical as that is our definition, but it's more to healthy than physical, let's say physical and or mental and emotional, that the eye contact, touch and smile, that emotion actually allow the child to develop. Can you imagine how much more so we are a child with disability? Needs the eye contact, the touch, and that smile and those emotions. So if you have a child with a disability as a parent, get some counseling if you're having difficulty. There's nothing wrong. You're not a bad person for feeling those emotions. What you would never do is verbalize them to the child. Yes? But there's nothing wrong with how you feel because you're a human being and nobody can prepare you or can stick a program in to say, oh, you're going to have positive feelings towards your child because of disability. Mm-hmm. You're a human being. So get rid of that guilt of having those emotions as a parent is very vital. Okay, you own those emotions and be okay with those emotions. Get therapy for those emotions. And in the meantime, giving that child physical, emotional touch. As we continue to develop now as a parent, also preparing ourselves for the periods of that child's life, the terrible twos, 5 years old, 8 years old, teenage years with this child, this baby, because once again, they will be going through very similar emotions in their own way, as also understanding that and being proactive for the child as the child develops. And also for your child now, so from the child's perspective, in order to assist them, also getting therapy, people that are specialized in this area, allowing the kids to be among children of similar disabilities. One of the things with able-bodied parents, you could have a child, let's say a child is hearing impaired, and yes, I treat my child normal. It's not actually abnormal, but the child does have a disability as far as communicating with the world, to hear the world. But what many parents would do is that they don't want to send them to what they consider special needs school or specialized school system. And they would keep them in the mainstream school. And what can happen to that child is the child can start to have a level of discontent and frustration because they're now put in a disadvantage. But what it does for the parent don't want to feel the child is abnormal. Oh, my child is normal. And nobody says the child is not normal. But you're now putting your child because of your own emotions and making it more difficult for the child instead of setting the child in an environment that caters for that child's need. It doesn't mean your child is not intelligent. It doesn't mean your child is not bright, quote unquote, for opinion terms. It doesn't mean your child will not become, you know, whatever profession, doctor, lawyer, prime minister. All it's saying is that putting them in an environment that is more conducive to their disability actually helps them, and then they're among their peers that they can actually connect with and relate to, which is quite important for children.
In terms of the parent now, as you were pointing out, with the child, they can build up a level of emotions, and one of them could be resentment towards the fact that they have a disability and the parents may not be treating them fairly. And then the parents also can experience resentment as well as to why did I have this child with a disability? Why is it so financially strenuous for me to care for this child? And then the father may have ducked out of the picture from day one. And why is he not here to help carry this load, you know?
Yes, so for those two areas, which is kind of piggybacking on what we just discussed. But yes, you can have this level of, let's start with the parents, where you're saying, like, what did they do to deserve this? You know, why is God punishing me? Or whatever that thing is, you know, I did something that I figured I should have done. You know, someone recently was asking me, you know, the child was hearing impaired, and, you know, and it was something that they did while they were pregnant, that they wondered if that's what made the child deaf. I was like, no, you know, they were saying they were listening to this loud music, and that's possibly why the child, you know, became deaf. I was like, no, that's not how it works. You know what I mean? How many people are pregnant that late to FETS and all sorts of craziness? We got a whole bunch of, you know, kids that are hearing impaired, if that was the correlation. So many of the people are looking or seeking why this happened to me and how come. And that can definitely cause a lot of, you know, subconscious starting the negative emotions. They even start to, without recognizing it, start to play out on the child. And also, once again, comparatively, there are a lot of people that have healthy children that are abusive. So imagine now that same person that is abusive have a child with a disability, right? So I think you figure, oh, because they have a disability is why my parent was abusive. No, there are abusive parents, both moms and dads, that are abusive, and their children are, as I said, able-bodied. So you can come in space, oh, because I had this disability is why mom treated me this particularly. And yes, you might have evidence where my two sisters or my brother or whoever, my siblings, were treated different to me, and I have a disability. And my parent treat me this way, my mother treat me this way, or like, and that is a strong evidence base of Yes, there was a significant difference in treatment that my mother gave to me. And that is true, and that can be very hurtful and abusive. And that is one of the reasons that I do say, once again, therapy is quite important. Do not take for granted that this is not something that you need to get assistance with, because it can lead you now into other unhealthy relationships, trying to solve and to quench this particular behavior. When it comes to the parent feeling discontent or disdain from their disabled child to the parent, now this could be a serious trauma, because the child now could end up in hatred and you know, somebody, because they're so angry with their life that it started to lash out at a very person that's trying to love them. So you could have this anger, and especially going as they get older. And what could happen to is, because a child has a disability, that discipline was not put in place. You're not talking about abuse. We talk about boundaries and standards and the like. So you could have this thing of they weren't as consistent about the boundaries. Yeah. With that child, so now the child is older, the child now does not understand no, or understanding space and respect and all those things. So now the child is developing, is getting older. Now this child now starts to lash out at you and have a almost anger towards you because of the lack of self-control. They're upset with themselves. They don't like how they look compared to their friends. And now they start taking on the very person or the subject to that. And the last kind of episode you can have, which is one we didn't touch, but is the disabled parent with an able-bodied child. Yeah? So you have now the disabled parent having able-bodied child or children, and also those children or child can be actually be abusive to the parent with disability. Yes? And that sometimes can happen as a result of the parent having disability, not having a strong support system, you know, be it the dad or the mother, like the dad has a disability or the mom has a disability, and not having another strong support system to help bring a level of sovereignty. But also can happen is that somebody parent with a disability actually allows the able-bodied child with less boundaries, because they went through their personal feeling of rejection or abandonment, or they felt as though life was unfair to them, and they could actually now overcompensate with the child. And now your child has less boundaries or less respect, and they extension now become abusive to the disabled peer. Yeah. And this is how this thing gets complex, because it goes in so many ways that here is now the rejection or neglect that this kid now start to mirror itself in so many ways, because the disabled child but becoming a disabled adult or a disability, and backstation now can have a child who's able-bodied. And now we can have a whole different kettle of fish altogether.
Yes. So, St. Clair, how do we practice this self-talk to build the confidence and really put ourselves on a level footing to cope with and remove the rejected feeling?
Yes, please. As I mentioned before, very quickly with everyone, that having that level of accepting self, and it does take time. There's something called emotional intelligence. There's that whole thing of dealing with that rejection, abandonment. It's good to have a person coach you through it. It is like anything else. If you want to learn how to sing, there's a coach. If you want to be a good basketball player, there's a coach. So people have this thing, oh, I don't want to go to therapy. I want to do it myself. And there's that sense. But it's good when you have somebody outside of you as able to look at this thing objectively and to help you to walk through it. So one of the things, if you're doing it on your own, which I prefer you get a coach, but if you're going to do it yourself, it's kind of embracing everything about yourself, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and seeing the strengths of self and the weaknesses of self, and own those. So if you're wheelchair bound, it is okay. I'm wheelchair bound. I cannot walk. But what can I do? Yes. And not to be a comparative more with other people, and not to get into that ruminative thinking of, you know, I'm this and I'm bad and I'm negative and I'm this. You know what I mean? It causes you to be comatose and not be able to function. Accepting self, embracing self, loving self, motivating self. I will say it again. Accepting self, embracing self, loving self, and motivating self. These are the things that will help you to start to be able to get yourself out of that rejection. I said beginning, not solved, but it's a beginning steps to get out of that rejection mode.
Well, St. Clair, I really want to thank you for helping us to unpack what rejection looks like and how we can face it so that we can accept ourselves, embrace ourselves, love ourselves, and certainly be the best person that we can be. So I really want to thank you for coming and helping us to examine this subject. I know that it is a difficult one for most people to deal with because they feel so rejected by family, by peers, by co-workers, by community, by society. But if we start to work on ourselves as individuals and do some of what St. Clair has been sharing with us, we can certainly change things around and take rejection out of our lives and certainly live a fulfilled life. So thanks again, St. Clair.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
And you have been listening to Visions with me, Yudley Wickham-Ashby, and my special guest, St. Clair Brown, as we looked at the topic of rejection. Remember, you can reach me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300 via email, visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That is visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And you can check this and past episodes on the VOB929.com website. So until next week, love yourself and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Ciao.